You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle, and this is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, July 5th, 2017.
What he or she has seen or done is completely ineffective for somebody else.
We bring you an Independence Day report from the Bloomington VFW coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Richard Fish covers a major court decision related to robocalls on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Indiana Family and Social Services Administration announced plans today to add 5 addiction treatment centers across the state, including one here in Bloomington. Officials say the 5 centers will be built in Greenwood, Fort Wayne, Terre Haute, Lafayette, and Bloomington. That would bring the state's number of opioid addiction facilities up to 19. The Family and Social Services Administration said the centers should be up and running within a year. The news comes after a slew of overdoses sent at least 15 people to the hospital in Bloomington over the past week. The Associated Press reported that heroin overdose deaths have tripled across the state since 2010.
Earlier this year, the Bloomington City Council passed an ordinance banning the use of electronic smoking devices in public places. To inform the public, the city is offering window clings to businesses that want to keep people from using vaporizers and e-cigarettes in their facilities. The city's health projects coordinator, Nancy Woolery, hopes the new signs will increase public knowledge of the ordinance.
We want everyone to know that right now there is no vaping as well as no tobacco smoking in all public buildings and places of employment. And that's why we need to get the word out. And we do have the window clings if businesses would like those, which specifically do say no smoking, no vaping. And that way when somebody does vape, and now that it's a law that they cannot, the managers will have a little more control over saying, no, this is illegal. We have a passed ordinance now, and I mean, they can point to the sign.
Although vapes and e-cigs are pushed as healthier alternatives to cigarettes, Woolery claims otherwise.
There's not a lot of research on them, but research is finding that there are a lot of different solutions in the vapor that can cause a lot of harm to folks who smoke them and those around them. So there's different chemicals that they put into each one, so it's hard really to know what you are using. And again, they are not regulated.
The aerosol that electronic smoking devices emit can contain carcinogens and toxins like formaldehyde, nickel, isoprene, and lead. Woolery says she is concerned about how these devices can appeal to children.
They make these electronic cigarette flavors in all different flavors, such as bubblegum, chocolate, marshmallow. So they're really trying to target the young kid to try using these, and whether or not a young person would then go ahead and try tobacco, you know, there's not a lot of research about that, but it is a possible way that a young kid gets hooked on this vaping and then says, oh, I think I'll try a cigarette.
Consequences for using an electronic smoking device or smoking in a public place are a $100 fine. Any business interested in receiving free window clings can contact the Community and Family Resources Department at 812-349-3430.
A local program providing education to juveniles in detention has received full funding. Monroe County Community Corrections Director Tom Rhodes says one of the goals of the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative is to keep juvenile offenders close to home for family and community support. Rhodes spoke to the Monroe County Commissioners this morning.
We have an understanding with the local school district to be able to teach children who are no longer able to attend school off school grounds, and we're excited about that because I've been in the business for a long time in criminal justice, and education is such a key factor. And the money also will be used in other alternatives to detention.
According to documents provided to the commissioners, the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative aims to invest in youth development and avoid mass incarceration. The initiative is based on a model by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. The State Department of Corrections has awarded the Monroe Circuit Court a total of $60,000 to fully fund the initiative. In other news, 11 organizations are receiving a total of $52,000 in support of their efforts to prevent and reduce illicit drug and alcohol use. The organizations were selected by Monroe County Cares, Incorporated, a local coordinating council of the Governor's Commission for a Drug-Free Indiana. Cares board member Steve Malone named a few of the award recipients for county commissioners.
One of them is the Boys and Girls Club. The other is Rhinos. We also provide funding to Girls Inc. and a few other agencies in town, like the Indiana Recovery Alliance.
New Leaf, New Life, Amethyst House, Shalom Center, and the Monroe County Drug Treatment Court were also on the list to receive funding from Monroe County Cares. Of the 11 awards, Rhinos received the most funding with a $7,000 award. Commissioner's Administrator Angela Purdy told the commissioners that the case board will retain $2,000 for operating expenses.
I will note that this is a severe decrease in the amount that CARES has had in the past. It's usually been closer to, I think, now $9,000.
Funding for the awards comes from fees charged to drunk driving and drug offenders. The fees, called countermeasure fees, range from $200 to $1,000.
Indiana State Health Commissioner Jerome Adams is advising physicians to be proactive in checking patients for Rocky Mountain spotted fever and other tick-borne diseases. The advisory comes after a 2-year-old Central Indiana girl died from the spotted fever last month. There have been 10 cases of Rocky Mountain spotted fever and 20 cases of Lyme disease so far this year. Commissioner Adams encouraged doctors to look for Rocky Mountain spotted fever even if a tick bite is not able to be found. Early symptoms of Rocky Mountain spotted fever include severe headaches, high fever, muscle aches, vomiting, rash, and restlessness. To prevent tick-borne illnesses, physicians recommend wearing bug repellent with DEET as well as long sleeves and pants when outdoors.
Officials from the Indiana Department of Education are reviewing how nearly 700 students were erroneously allowed to use calculators on this year's ISTEP exams. As a result, the scores were tossed out. The department states the testing company Pearson incorrectly instructed 20 schools to allow calculator use for a specific section in which they were prohibited. The department says the only students so far that must retake the math exam are some high school sophomores in order to meet graduation requirements. So far, no local schools have been affected.
Indiana's oldest wild bald eagle was spotted at Lake Monroe last month. The 29-year-old bird is among the original 73 bald eagles brought to Indiana in the 1980s. Assistant non-game bird biologist for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, Amy Kearns, says the eagles were brought from Alaska to Indiana in hopes to restore the bald eagle nesting population.
In 1985, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources Division of Fish and Wildlife began a bald eagle reintroduction project where we released 73 eagles into the wild and hoped that they would come back and form the base of a nesting population in Indiana. And the plan worked. They came back and started nesting again at Lake Monroe in 1991. And this year we have an estimated 300 nesting pairs in the state.
Professional photographer Stuart Forsyth was able to capture images of the eagle in the Middle Fork wildlife on June 24th. Researchers were able to identify her by the distinctive red leg band labeled C-43.
One of her leg bands says C-43, and that's how we're able to identify her as that individual. She was released in 1988 at Lake Monroe and wandered around, went to Kentucky and Tennessee until she was an adult. Then we found her nesting at Lake Monroe, and she might still be nesting there this year, even at 29 years old.
The restoration program is one of many programs dedicated to protecting endangered and threatened species in Indiana. It is the first endangered species restoration project initiated by the Department of Natural Resources non-game wildlife staff. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Yesterday, as citizens marked the 241st anniversary of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence, WFHB stopped by Bloomington's branch of the Veterans of Foreign War to talk with military families about the holiday. Reporter Arjun Belasundaram brings us that story for today's WFHB Community Report.
This 4th of July, Commander of Veterans of Foreign Wars Post in Bloomington and a Vietnam War veteran himself, Roy Smith, helped us pick his brain on a variety of subjects related to 4th of July, the U.S. Army, and the life of a veteran.
It's a celebration of the country that I was willing to defend, that it's a celebration of the birth of the nation and the things that are stated about our goals in the Declaration of Independence. It's, you know, an ideal utopian document, but it's still the document that most Americans try to live by.
The men who protect our borders go through a lot of mental as well as economic problems once they retire from the Army.
We still don't have a good handle on PTSD. You know, and one of the things that shows you that is it keeps changing names. In the Civil War, it was often referred to as seeing the elephant. In World War I, it became shell-shocked. In World War II, it became combat fatigue. Now it's PTSD. And psychiatry is an inexact science, you know, something that will allow one veteran to fully cope with what he or she has seen or done is completely ineffective for somebody else. It's an ongoing problem for the VA. It's an ongoing problem for organizations like my organization, the Legion, the AMVETS, you know, of trying to supply support for the veterans that do suffer PTSD. And it's such a broad subject, you know, like I have heard some veterans say that we all suffer PTSD. It's just the matter of degree.
On our drive to the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post in Bloomington, Smith also shared what he does during his free time while he was active in service.
Because I was young and single, did the kind of standard go into town and go to a drinking establishment and, you know, the whole stereotypical soldiers on leave kind of a situation.
VFW is a place where veterans and families of veterans hang around and just interact with each other and have a good time. Smith gave us a tour of the place and read through the couple of brunches and hot dog specials on their menu to celebrate the occasion. Dorothy White, president of the VFW Auxiliary at the post and the wife of a Vietnam War veteran, was busy preparing the brunches for the day at the kitchen.
Well, other than trying to put on things for the veterans, we, like I said, with the meals, we try and keep them down to a minimum so that, you know, it doesn't take a hunk out of their pockets. And we donate to the disabled veterans and the veterans' homes, Lafayette Home, and we help, like, veterans come in and talk with them, and if they need things, we try and work with them to get it.
The families of military personnel also go through a great deal of suffering, not knowing whether their loved one will return home safely, and White's situation was no different.
When he was gone and overseas, it's really scary. You know, you don't know, and if you didn't get a letter when you thought you should, it really upset you. But after a little bit, you kind of like, okay, you know he's coming home. You got to believe that. So, and then you just wait till he comes home.
Deborah Deckard, bartender at VFW and an Afghan war veteran, was seen in high spirits while serving drinks to veterans sitting around at the bar. Deckard shared her personal experience of the society's reaction when a woman decides to join the army.
Our society, actually nothing. Now, when we were in Afghanistan, they were very amazed because the guys would be like, are you married? And you'd be like, if you said yes, then they'd want to know why your husband let you go. And it'd be like, we don't have a choice. Uncle Sam wants us to go. It has nothing to do with our husbands. So I would say from here, I didn't get anything from our society. But they were just amazed over there that women could just go, just to go, you know, that they didn't really have a say-so in a sense. But here I didn't run into anything like that. There was, and maybe because I was older, so I'm more of a mom, grandma figure, so they didn't, you know, I'm not going to say anything to her, you know, kind of thing. But, I mean, no, I didn't. I was going to say, more than anything, people would just like, I wish you luck, I hope you do well, I hope you do what you want to do and accomplish what you need to accomplish. So I didn't face too much. One of the few, I think. But some people did have harder times.
Tim and Kathy Henney, members of the auxiliary, stressed on the importance for a civilian to thank an army personnel for their service.
And although I think the July 4th is important and it's great to celebrate it, I think anytime you see a military person, if they're serving now, to extend your hand and thank them for their service is great. I think they appreciate that more than people realize.
Smith describes why 4th of July holds a special place in his heart.
I've enjoyed my time as a soldier and my time as a veteran. I think my service was of value to the United States. And you know, I've been to 28, 29 countries on 5 different continents. It's the best place I've ever seen. So happy birthday, America. Let's keep going for another 241 years.
Reporting for WFHB, I am Arjun Balasundaram.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Indiana has a law against robocalls, and it's here to stay. The United States Supreme Court just decided that, once and for all, upholding an appeals court ruling from last January. It is against the law for anyone from anywhere to call you using a machine to dial your number just to play a recorded message. Now, there are a few exceptions, though. Debt collectors can still robocall you, and so can a company who is recalling a product under warranty. Messages regarding disasters or public safety can be delivered by robocall, too. But anyone who wants to sell you something or give you any kind of a political pitch must have a live human being call you, even if they ask you to listen to a recording. This is a big deal because the Indiana Attorney General had over 16,000 complaints last year about phone calls, and over half of those were about robocalls. Since 2009, the Attorney General's office has gotten 149 judgments or settlements against robocallers, and the state has been awarded over $20 million in fines, although they've only been able to collect about 5 cents on the dollar from the slippery individuals involved. If you are, or someone you know is, being bombarded with robocalls, there are things you can do about it. First and simplest, don't answer. Alex Quilici, CEO of UMail, a visual voicemail and robocall blocking service, said, if no one ever picked up the phone when it rang, robocalls would stop. So if you don't recognize the number on your caller ID, let it go to voicemail. If there's no message, it's a scam. If there is, you can always just call right back. Or try a call blocker. For about $100, you can get a gadget for your landline phone that'll block selected numbers and robocalls. This can be a lifesaver for older people, but it takes a little doing to set it up properly. For cell phones and internet-based telephones, there are free robocall blocking apps like Nomo Robo. And virtually every phone company has a very handy service in place just waiting for you to activate it. You can block any call that does not show a caller ID. You know, the ones with all zeros or that just say private or blocked or something. And all you have to do is press *77. That's right, *77. You can even turn it off anytime by pressing *87. But why? If one of those damned robots does manage to sneak through and all you hear is a recording when you answer the phone, hang up. That's important. Never interact. Never press any buttons or say anything. Never wait for an agent. Just hang up immediately. And then do anything you can to have the number permanently blocked. Machines should know their place and speak when spoken to, or they'll take over. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Ashley Curtis, Wes Martin, Robert Goldkamp, and Cole Stinson, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Arjun Balasundaram.
Our engineer today is Michael Glab. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasters in 2016, by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. And stay tuned for the Brown County Hour coming up next on WFHB.
You're tuned to W... The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.